There has been a large amount of social science research on eyewitness identification, and to some extent spurred by the prevalence of wrongful identification in wrongful convictions. And what it has done is revealed some of the potential pitfalls of eyewitness identification. And whereas it had always been thought of as the gold standard, we have an eyewitness who saw a crime and will come into court and identify people, we've come to realize that when a person witnesses something, it's not put on tape, like a videotape. And we've also come to realize that either inadvertently or in some cases intentionally, when a police officer tries to get an identification from an eyewitness, they can impact how that eyewitness perceives the event or remembers the event and remembers who it was. So to the best of our abilities, we are trying to create a process that takes out any human impact in the memory of a crime so that the eyewitness will remember as best they can, and also reveal the limitations of eyewitness identification to a jury when it's presented.
And how do you legislate that? I mean, what kind of legislation would you propose to go along that line?
In the United States, there have been really two ways that that's happened. One is prescriptive legislation, which lays out what are currently the best practices in eyewitness identification and sets them all out and requires all law enforcement agencies to follow that. The second is that a law requires that all law enforcement agencies have written standards and that they be the best practices, and that the academy or wherever police officers are trained has a standard that they follow on what the best practices are. So that can be updated as they're reviewed, but they are there and written, and all police agencies follow them.
Would that be kind of like a, for example, like a checklist that a detective or an officer might go through as they interview a potential witness?
Exactly. And what it is generally is in lineups, and now almost exclusively they use photo lineups as opposed to live lineups. And what will happen is they create a process where it's called sequential double-blind identification. And what that means is they put together a lineup of six photographs, and all of the photographs are as close as possible to the witness's description of the person. The person who puts together the photo lineup does not know who the suspect is, and the witness does not know who the suspect is, and the police officer will say the suspect may or may not be there, and when a person is identified, they get a confidence statement on how confident the person is, and rather than what you normally see, what the six-pack where six photos are shown at the same time, they found it much more effective if they're shown them one at a time. So there's a procedure that has been developed through, again, this social science research that provides the best possible identification that we can get now.
Did that come out of perhaps some subconscious or subliminal or maybe, and probably very likely, unintentional bias on a particular picture of a particular suspect in a lineup by a detective to a witness of a particular crime?
And I think that's right, Matt. They have found that even the most well-meaning police officer can transmit unintentional signals when they're presenting a photo identification to a suspect if they think they know who the perpetrator is. And as I said, it in most cases is totally unintentional, but they found that these signals are passed. As an addition to this, Alaska has a number of rural police agencies that don't have the manpower to, have multiple police officers there for a photo identification. So they developed a method. It's called the folder shuffle method, where the pictures are put into folders. They're shuffled up. When the police officer presents them to the witness, the police officer doesn't know which photo they're looking at, so they can't pass these subliminal messages to the eyewitness.
Now, kind of shifting to your fundraiser that you have planned for this weekend, and it includes the showing of the movie The Central Park Five by Ken Burns, wasn't that based on eyewitness identification, that particular case?
To a great degree, it was a case of false confessions that were elicited from five teenagers who were 14, 15, 16 years old at the time. I don't think that there was anyone who actually witnessed the crime, and these five individuals were picked out because they were in the Central Park area where this happened at the time, and they were questioned by police, and I think all five of them confessed to a crime they didn't commit.
And they later recanted, didn't they?
They recanted very soon after, but it was a high-profile case, and those confessions were used to convict them. And, you know, not to ruin the movie, the ending of the movie, but an individual later confessed to the crime, said he did it alone, and his DNA matched the DNA they found at the scene.